Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of the More Than Running podcast with Dana Giordano. I'm your host, and I'm so excited to introduce this week's guest, Ellie Purrier. Ellie and I have known each other a very long time since high school, where we met and competed against each other. And I think that Ellie is a phenomenal person and someone that we should all know a little bit more about than the stories you have already heard. Ellie graduated from UNH and runs for Team New Balance Boston. This past summer, Ellie qualified for the World Championships in the 5K and set a personal best in the final of the World Championships. Most recently, Ellie set the American record in the mile this past winter at the Millrose Games, where she ran a phenomenal 4:16 mile. This episode was recorded a way, way long time ago in January, so not only was it my first podcast, sorry to be deceptive and have this be the second podcast, but this was my first podcast that I ever did, so bear with me there. This podcast was recorded before a lot of things, not only, as I said before, Ellie, before she broke the record of the mile, but also before COVID-19. So there are some conversations that don't make a ton of sense given the timing, but I think it's worth sharing anyways. I wanted to also give a little note that I wish I gave Ellie a little bit more time to breathe, and we will definitely be doing a follow-up podcast episode with her regarding her current training situation and kind of her reflection on breaking the American record and changing her life up a little bit due to COVID-19. I'm so excited for you guys to hear from Ellie. Hopefully you learned a little bit something, and I really appreciate the support. Thank you, and enjoy the episode. All right, January 20th, I am in Flagstaff, Arizona with my friend Ellie Purrier. Pronounced that correctly?
Yes.
And this is my first podcast ever of the More Than Running podcast. So as described in the intro, this is going to be about just kind of conversations between two friends about women's professional distance running, who we are, what's going on, but mainly about my guest and kind of the topic I wanted to discuss with Ellie today is a sense of place with running and with her background of where you came from, where you started, and how you ended up here in Flagstaff today. For context, today is January 20th, 2020, so we're leading into the Olympic trials, which are in June, so it's kind of an interesting time up here. How are you feeling about it being January and the trials being less than 6 months away?
I'm feeling pretty good. You know, it's still a bit of time, so I feel like the nerves and everything haven't set in, but definitely starting to, you know, get into a groove and start really training harder, and so a little bit anxious, but
yeah.
It's been going really good, so.
Yeah. So this would be your second year full-time running?
Yeah.
Does it feel like you've been doing it for longer?
Kind of. Like, yeah. I feel like I've been running since high school, and I feel like the last few years of college I started taking it more serious. So I feel like maybe because I did a fifth year, like it kind of dragged it out a little bit, and I was really ready for that next step. Before I took it. And so, yeah, I guess it does seem like I've been doing it longer, but.
And I wanted to look this up, but I didn't before this podcast started. Last year, did you go to more than 10 countries to compete? I was trying to figure it out.
10? Not quite that.
Not quite that many.
No.
Because you competed in the U.S., obviously, and then in the summer, you went to Rome to start.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, Worlds were in Qatar. Qatar?
Qatar. Yeah, I think that I don't really say it right, but
I don't know how to say
it. It's Qatar, I think, is how they pronounce it, but everybody in the U.S. says Qatar, so.
That's, like, how everyone in the U.S. says, like, Adidas and Nike, but in Europe they say Adidas and Nike.
Yeah.
Or, I think, like, New Balance is safe.
Or Oregon.
Yeah. So you are coming off kind of a special year, and the reason why I wanted you as my first guest was just because we've known each other a really long time.
Since high school.
And it's kind of funny to think about, like, the different paths we kind of took towards professional running, but doing the same thing
and all the different ways that you could get there. But
yeah,
thinking about like all the people that we competed against in high school that are no longer in the sport, mm-hmm. and kind of, because I'm 26, you're 25.
Gonna be 25 next.
Gonna be 25 yeah. next week. Wow.
Next month, yeah.
Next month. I was like, did I miss your birthday?
No.
But it's interesting to me, like all the different paths we took to get here today in Flagstaff, like at an altitude training camp. Like, if I was to put money on the 2011 NXN team, like who would have made it this far? I definitely wouldn't have bet on me. Would you bet on yourself?
I had no clue what I was doing. No, I would not have bet on myself.
So this brings us to a really point. So I want to like really fast, I want to reverse everything to the very beginnings of Ellie before running. Like, let's talk about Montgomery, Vermont.
Yeah, sure.
So you are from how far from Canada?
Oh, like a few miles. Like my high school is a mile and a half to Canada. But like my town was like 10 to 15 minutes away from the border.
Did you go to Canada often being that close? Or was it just kind of like we're really close to Canada?
Yeah, it was more just we're really close to Canada. Like when I was younger, we would go across like up to the zoo and stuff like that. But like they started to come up with like more rules and like you had to have like your passport and everything to go across the border. So
yeah,
it wasn't until like college when I actually got my passport that I would go up there more. But
yeah,
my fiance's family is very like strong relations with Canada and
oh, wow.
very French Canadian. So I feel like, yeah.
Is he French Canadian, your fiance?
His dad is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And his dad's side of the family is very French Canadian.
So you grew up born and raised in Montgomery, Vermont,
mm-hmm.
and you have two siblings?
Yes, an older sister and a younger brother.
And the story that kind of is told about Ellie quite frequently is you were raised on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me a little bit more about what your farm is? And from what the little bit of research that I've done is that your family farm has been around since like the early 1900s.
Yeah, it's fifth generation, so it's the Perrier side of my family. My dad grew up there, his dad grew up there, and his dad grew up there.
Wow.
So it's been in the family for a long time. I think the barn itself was built in like the 1880s.
So maybe they had a barn raising party. Is that actually a thing?
I don't know. They might have. But yeah, I grew up... like doing chores, and it was a big part of my life growing up. I'm very thankful for having that lifestyle.
Yeah. So your farm produces mostly dairy.
Yes. Yeah.
So dairy cows.
Yeah.
Do you guys produce anything else? I heard a story about you and pigs.
Yeah. So that was kind of a hobby, but our milk goes to Cabot Cheese. So that's like,
do you know how much I love Cabot cheese?
Good.
So Cabot, because I went to school at Dartmouth, and for some reason, I think just the whole New England area, we had these freshman trips. So you would start school, and everyone's on orientation, and they immediately oriented you to loving Cabot cheese, like the big blocks of cheddar. Like, which one's your favorite?
The sharp cheddar.
The sharp cheddar.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good. So does everything your family farm produce go to Cabot?
Yeah, that's where it goes, yeah.
Do you guys consume a lot of what you make yourselves?
Yeah, we get like orders of cheese like a couple times a year from Cabot, and it like we just put it in the basement. We have like a big fridge down there, but
oh wow,
we love the cheese. Yeah,
like an industrial fridge?
No, it's just like a normal fridge, but it's in the basement because there's not enough space upstairs.
So I actually in my creepy research of you, so this is funny because we are friends, but I had to be prepared for this podcast. You would wake up like super early in the morning every day.
Yeah.
And like, so what age do you kind of start working? Would you call it like a farmhand or kind of just like an assistant or?
Yeah.
So your parents kind of, they knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And then you kind of, at what age do you feel like you were like fully integrated in the daily like chore lifestyle?
Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, I don't remember a time when I wasn't helping on the farm. Like, there's, like, pictures of us, like, from, like, you know, like, toddlers with, like, shovels and stuff in our hands. Yeah. But I feel like it just, you know, every year I would be able to do a little bit more. And honestly, probably, like, around the time of, like, fifth grade, I was, like, probably, like, a real help to the farm. Like, obviously, I you know, couldn't, like, I mean, my brother probably started driving tractors around that age, but, like, we're not, like, yeah. we weren't running the show by ourselves or anything, but my dad got another job when we were at, you know, like, in second or third grade. We stopped milking for a while, and he got another job, but we still had heifers. We always had cows in the barn, mm-hmm. and so my brother and sister and I would always do chores with my dad in the morning, and he would go off to his other job, and we'd, like, finish up and everything, and then
wow.
and then go to school. Yeah, so that was, like, that probably from, like, middle school all the way through high school.
And so when you came home from school, like, did you do, like, after-school sports or anything, or did you have to come home and do work on that work, continue working when you got back?
Both. Like, my parents were always really supportive of me and my siblings doing other sports, so that was good. Like, I'd always do them in the morning, and then in the afternoon, like, depending on if it was, like, afternoon, like, sometimes, like, in basketball, we'd have, like, later practice, you know.
Basketball so, player.
Oh, yeah, I played basketball 4 years of high school.
Wow.
That was my dream sport.
Are you kidding?
Oh, yeah, if I could have gone pro in basketball.
Wow, totally you would. Might need a couple more inches. Actually, you could have been I know nothing about basketball, so this isn't very helpful. Point guard, right?
I was a point guard, yeah.
You were a point guard.
I wasn't very good at shooting. That was my...
Do you know there's actually a fair amount of professional women who did basketball, like distance runners? I know two who did basketball in college and start running until later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Lauren Johnson, who was on the BA, and then Skyland, who runs for Saucony, she played basketball. She didn't start running track until like 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So that could have been you.
Could have been me.
Did you ever have any... kind of further opportunities to play basketball, or like once running kind of took over, you was like,
yeah. I didn't really focus on it after. It was just what I enjoyed doing, you know, in high school. I didn't really see myself doing it past that. My sister did play in college, so like I could see that, but like it wasn't like Division I or anything. So
I want to continue talking about the farm, because I think this is just something that's so important from what I see, like so important to you. So in Montgomery, Vermont, how many other people own / work on farms? Is it like that is the main source of income from the area, or is it kind of just you had a fifth generation farm, so that's what you guys did? Or was it something that the area is known for?
I'd say it's a little bit of both. Definitely like strong roots like in my like county, I'd say, but my town, honestly, my dad's the only one left. Like my town's very small.
Yeah.
But my parents are the only farm left in Montgomery that are shipping milk. Yeah. And
so what does that mean by left? So there was other farms?
Yeah. Like when my dad was growing up, there was a lot. There'd probably be like, I don't know, like 20 or so like in the town. And like when, maybe not quite that many. Probably a little less.
I mean, it's a very small town. Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a small town. And when my grandfather was around, obviously it was like way, way more, but much, much smaller amounts of cows. You know what I mean? So like now like there's like this trend where farms are getting bigger and bigger. And like it's got its downfalls and it's good at the same time. You know what I mean? It's like more efficient in a lot of ways. But, you know, the milk market right now is just like not – good. So like a lot of people are, it's like been depressed prices for like a number of years.
Is that because people are kind of looking to like milk alternatives, like an almond milk or oat milk, or is it just more of,
just
like a cultural thing, like a shift in the demand for milk?
It's, it's definitely a lot of factors. Like the milk market's like super complicated and hard to understand even for like me, who somebody's like in the industry or has been in it. And, you know, I think part of it is definitely like the alternatives. That's like, you know, a portion of it.
I've heard those aren't good either. Like almond milk is killing the bees.
Yeah. And I mean, don't even get me started.
No, this is what this is for. I mean,
obviously, like I'm super biased, but
well, you have to be. Someone has to be biased about the milk market. You know?
I think that milk coming from a cow is like the most nutritious milk that there is because it's not fortified at all, other than the vitamin D, which people don't get enough vitamin D anywhere. So you might as well take a supplement from somewhere.
Yeah.
But other than that, all the nutrients in it are natural and. Yeah.
And Elliot studied nutrition in college, so this is not only biased information, but it's also factual, because that was your major.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, because it's an animal-based product, the nutrients are already, you know, absorbed better. Like, your body, they're more bioavailable to your body because they're more similar to, like, what's in your body and the enzymes that digest it and everything. So, but also, like, parts of it have to do with demand and, like, people are just drinking less cow's milk. And another part of it is that farmers have actually become so efficient in making milk that you need, like, a lot less cows to make the same amount of milk. So less cows means less farms, you know. So that's
definitely a part of it. I never even thought about it that way. I think that I've seen – there was, like, a big trend kind of, like, when we were early in high school, like, those documentaries, like, Food Inc. and kind of those very brash exposés of, like, the American farm industry that I think kind of don't show that side of, like, the actual technological benefits that have made everything more efficient.
Yeah, I think that farmers, dairy farmers especially, get a really bad rap sometimes, like, unnecessarily, and it's really... like, sad to me, because I feel like the dairy farmers in America are, like, constantly making better ways of farming and more efficient ways. And, like, my fiance went to school, and he went to one of the best, you know, dairy schools in the country, in the world. And
so your fiance, Jamie.
Yes.
He also, his family has a farm, but it's a much larger farm.
Yeah.
And they produce milk and maple syrup.
Right.
And then anything else?
No, that's it.
Well, I mean, I'm still waiting for this maple syrup. I've heard phenomenal things.
It's great, yeah.
But I remember listening to kind of a maybe it was an interview or a podcast about Ashton Eaton, the Olympic champion decathlete. He was saying, like, if you're going to put anything into your body that's a dairy product, why would you ever not have, like, the whole version of it? So people kind of... I feel like there was a trend of, oh, we're going to have skim milk, we're going to have this type of milk, and that's kind of, like, transitioned into these alternatives where it's almost come away from not knowing what the benefits of, like, actual milk are for you. Like, there's a lot of nutritional benefits to drinking it.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And that's, like, a thing where, like, it's trendy and, like, there's always different research and it's hard for the consumer to, you know, understand that. And honestly, like, I'm not even sure, like... It all depends on your goals. Like, when you're consuming food, like, you have to think about, well, okay, is this helping me in what way? Like, what nutrients do I need right now? Yeah. So, like, if you're trying to limit fat, then skim milk or lower reduced fat milk is, you know, a great option. It's nutritious and it has, like, less fat if that's something that you're trying to do. But if you're not, you know, and then you're talking about the, you know, the way that the fat reacts in your body and everything. So, like... I mean, it's just so complicated.
We could talk about this all day, but I definitely want to talk about you. And then, I mean, I know this is probably something that you rehearsed or just kind of have spoken about before, but it's not a typical lifestyle of your competitors. Like, I would say, do you know anyone else who woke up at 5:30 every morning to do their farm chores before going to school and practice? I feel like I want to know more about. Have you reflected on that recently as a professional woman, like how that has kind of made you into the person you are today?
Definitely it has. Like I said before, like I'm so thankful that I grew up the way I did. And I think that growing up on the farm just taught me a great work ethic. It taught me how to be tough and it taught me a lot of life lessons that like even from a young runner, I would translate into my career. You know, I would have a lot of metaphors that I would take something that I was familiar with. And my high school coach, Andrew Hathaway, helped me with this a lot where I was really comfortable on the farm. So I would take things from that and translate it into my running. And, you know, I'm like, okay, if this was a scenario on the farm, like how would I react? You know, so like.
Oh, interesting.
Even today. Yeah, sometimes I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now I've gotten more comfortable with running. So I'll take like. Lessons from like a hard workout and
bring it to the farm
or any other problem I'm having.
So when you go home on like a vacation or to visit your fiance, are you thrown straight back into the world that you grew up in? Or is it, I mean, you're definitely not a soft distance runner. You're not sitting all day with your legs up.
No.
Does that make you like, so I get, let's reframe this. What's the hardest part about being a professional distance runner for you?
It's definitely being away from my family and home. Like, I guess I do like identify a lot with how I grew up and just being a farm kid, and I'm very proud of that. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, going to college for 4 years and now like having this career that I'm still like away from home quite a bit of time, like mm-hmm. that's definitely the biggest challenge, but I've, you know, I've made it work and it's all worth it. And, yeah, but like when I, like, I'm very thankful for my coach, like letting me go home on the weekends and stuff when we don't mm-hmm. have stuff going on. But when I do go home and it's like the middle of the season, I don't really help. Like I might go down to the barn yeah. and hang out with my dad.
And it's probably really challenging for you being so, such a helpful person, not being able to do that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like oftentimes when I go home for a winter break, like I have nothing to do. I'm not like you. I don't have a farm to tribute to. Like the only things I could probably benefit are helping in the kitchen, my mom or something. But yeah. you almost feel this sense of guilt of leaving your family to Definitely. Do your job. And I can only sense that that would be amplified if your family and their work are kind of like put together.
Definitely. That's like exactly what I was going to say. Like I think that my parents support me so much, like more than I could ever ask. And so like they're not upset with me that I'm gone, but like, mm-hmm. it definitely like, you know, like I call and talk to them and they're just talking about how much snow there is and yeah. how, you know, like they're, you know, whatever,
and I would,
just
Montgomery
working.
Probably wouldn't be the best place in the winter seeing it says on the Canadian border. Yeah. That'd be a pretty impossible place to train for.
Oh yes. Yeah. So I couldn't like, I mean, I do it like when I go home for Christmas and everything, but like not for an extended amount of time, you know.
I know, but we're sitting here in Flagstaff and the sun shines every day and we're at 7,000 feet and it snowed, knock on wood, like 3 times since we've been here, not very much at all.
Yeah, not much. Yeah.
It's definitely not the Northeast. So I went to school in New Hampshire, so did Ellie. Mm-hmm. And so I would just think we're a little bit tougher because of it, the yeah, snow, definitely. But I would say I've gotten soft even not being in school in New Hampshire and running in Vermont, probably, like, Boston is not as bad uh-huh. as up north.
No, definitely not, especially when they're out there, like, plowing the sidewalks and everything.
So let's transition a little bit. Let's go a little positive. What's your favorite part of being a professional athlete? So you, NCAA champion in the mile, you started a steeple, you kind of transitioned, you had mm-hmm. opportunities, which is a phenomenal position to be in. Eventually signed with New Balance based in Boston. You have a team. You're sitting here in Flagstaff. What do you think your favorite part of being a professional distance runner is?
I definitely think, you know, pushing myself all the time is one of my favorite parts. Like the physical aspects of, you know, always getting better. And it's like, you know, getting ready for the races. But I don't know. It's like hard to pinpoint the one thing, but definitely mm-hmm. it's like being physical, pushing myself, always doing better at races and in workouts. You know, I really love that I have this passion yeah. For running.
And do you have that kind of, is it every day for you? Or does it kind of like ebb and flow more towards workouts? I would say for me, it's definitely, I get kind of like excitement when it's closer to a race or a workout and I have a little bit more challenge with like the day-to-day, mm-hmm. like regular runs. But for you, is that like every time you leave the door, to go running, is it the same or how do your emotions, do they fluctuate?
Oh, they definitely do. Like when you're out here, like in a grind, you know, like just like running all the time and like not really doing anything else. Like that's definitely like where I don't love it the most. But, you know, when it gets closer to races, I get really excited. And then there's like some of those days that you just like have a great run, like with your teammates, you mm-hmm. know, and,
do you think you've ever had, a runner's high?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
A couple times, but
I like to think that I actually had a really good run today where sometimes when you're running with like the same people, like you can almost feel like you feel worse than you do, but then you add one more new person and you have new conversation topics and you're yeah. like, I feel so good.
Yeah, definitely like when you're not like always just thinking about like the repetitive motion and you're just like out enjoying the nice weather, like, you know, getting your work in, but enjoying it with, like, other people that understand it, too.
Do you have, what kind of session makes you feel, like, the most like an athlete? Because I think women's professional sports are definitely in an interesting position right now where there's a lot of conversation about it, but I, from my point of view, we're not often seen as athletes. We're just seen as like what we're doing. So what are those days that you're like, I feel like a badass, I feel like an athlete, aside from races? Like, what's a day that Ellie's leaving the track with a smile on her face, or a run, or like the gym? Like, do you have a favorite session?
Yeah, I definitely like fartleks the most, but that's like kind of, we don't do that as much when we're like in the thick of the training. We kind of do that to build up, but I don't know. I really love mile repeats. Those are my favorite.
On the track?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I like mile repeats, but like it's got to be on the grass or something. Like it can't be on the track. I don't want to know what pace I'm at every.
Oh, I love it. Like I think I'm just so comfortable with the mile. And I always know that I can run a mile no matter what I'm feeling. Like, yep, it's only a mile. I can do it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I feel like that's probably one of my stronger workouts. And so I always feel pretty good about those. But I feel like the ones that make me feel the most good or the best is when I like don't think I can do it, and then I do it, you know?
So there's one workout I'm thinking of, and maybe you have a better example of this past summer. So you had a phenomenal summer. You made Team USA in the 5K, PR'd multiple times. But I remember the summer was pretty hot in Boston, and kind of all the Boston groups, for context, work out together sometimes. So there's the Boston Athletic Association, New Balance Boston, Saucony. So we kind of melt. But you were doing a tempo run in lane 8.
With Abby.
Abby D'Agostino, reverse direction. And was it every 200 you guys, or was it every 400 you guys changed pace? I think it was like 200 on, 200 off. And then you had like 10 meters to like slow down.
Yeah, it was, we would do like 350 or something like that. And then we jogged 50 meters. And then, so it was like a 6 miles of that.
So that looked like one of, from an outsider's perspective.
Yeah.
That looked like a crazy workout.
Honestly, that was probably one of the hardest workouts I did. Part of it, I think, was that I had never done a longer workout like that in lane 8, and I didn't like it. I was like, I should be over there. Why am I out here?
And you were going backwards as well.
And it was so hot that day. Mm-hmm. But Abby was great to work out with, and I definitely got stronger from that workout.
Do you leave a session like that feeling like you have no doubts in like your personal conviction of what you're doing?
Yeah, like I always feel good about it. Like I feel like sometimes you get really nervous for workouts because it's kind of like a race, and it's like, why? Like you're going to be able to do it. It's just going to hurt for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And then after, you just feel so much better about yourself, and you know that work that you did is going to help you race better. It's going to help you feel better on that day that it matters, you know?
Yeah. So if you weren't a professional distance runner right now, like, do you know what you'd be doing? Do you have a sense of that? Do you think about that?
Sometimes I do, but I think that I started preparing to be a professional runner pretty early in my college career, so I didn't really tailor my, you know, school but I didn't set myself up to do anything else other than be a professional runner right now.
So you kind of knew.
Yeah, I feel like I did. Like
you're the opposite of me. I rejected it for a long time. I think for me it was I had a lot of women, like Abby D'Agostino, for example, that I was like, she's an 11-time All-American. She's a 7-time national champion. Like, that's who goes pro, like, not me. So yeah. That was definitely, I think it's just interesting how everyone kind of approaches. Because it's almost as if distance running is, like, a semi-professional sport in a way.
Yeah.
Where no one knows how it works. So when you approach a stranger and they ask what you do, what do you say?
Sometimes I say a lot of different things depending on like where I am, how much time I have and stuff like that.
You're in the mood.
Yeah. Sometimes I say I'm a professional runner. Sometimes I say I'm a professional athlete.
Do you ever lie?
Sometimes I just say I work for New Balance.
No, I do the same thing. Because
they ask like why I'm wearing so much New Balance stuff. No, I don't do that very often. But
sometimes
like,
I lie when I'm tired because I just can't. Yeah. I just can't. And because then it's, I'm like, oh, what do you do? What's your event? Oh, you can break 5 minutes? And you're like, oh my gosh. And I break 5 minutes.
Five minutes, I did that in high school.
You're like, that's terrible. Yeah. I think it's a really interesting thing because as I, like me personally, and tell me about yourself, but the more confident you get in what you're doing, and if you have success, the more you can be like, yes, this is what I'm doing. Like, and I feel really good about it.
Yeah.
But if you're like struggling in your training or kind of with being away from home, then you're like, you don't want to share what you're doing.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel.
I mean, that's just me. You could feel totally differently. You're like, nah, I feel good all the time.
No, I feel like sometimes when I say I'm a professional runner, like, I feel like people, like, might think I'm bragging when I'm, like, not trying to. So I think that's my biggest, like, reason why I wouldn't explain to somebody what I'm doing. But sometimes people, like, are so amazed by it, and that's great. Like, I feel great that they appreciate that. And then other people, like, I feel like just, like, don't believe me.
I know. It's kind of like a complex we all have.
Yeah. I'm mostly picturing myself sitting on the airplane, you know, like, trying to start awkward conversation with strangers.
And it's crazy because you could be running at Harvard and doing these incredible workouts, and it's so casual because I feel like in Boston running is like a very big cultural thing. Mm-hmm. Or you could go somewhere else and people are like, who's this crazy girl running down the street? Yeah. Or you go to Europe and the stadium's completely full. So you're like, where does, like, what sport am I doing where it is looked at so differently in so many different places?
Yeah. Well, it's definitely like a very inclusive sport. Like, I feel like a lot of people who just want to go for a run to be healthy, like, they do the same thing, and they kind of, you know, in a way feel the same pain, you know, so I feel like people can relate to it a lot. But then we're at this, like, extra level that a lot of people just don't even have a sense of, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's so many different levels of sport, and one thing I like is that what we're doing can inspire kind of people at all levels without being able to, like, do what we're doing.
Yeah.
And kind of on that note, what advice would you give to, like, high school women who are pursuing running? So one thing that I kind of want to explore with this podcast is sometimes I feel like the times that professional women are running are so kind of out of reach for a high school woman to comprehend. So if you want to talk about a little bit of what advice would you give to high school women who are pursuing running, and kind of, like, in that way, your trajectory of where you started to where you are now.
Uh-huh. I guess my biggest advice would be to do what works for you and to not compare yourself to others. I feel like I've definitely had a unique, career, and I've, you know, been like a really low mileage runner at points in the beginning, and I just built up, you know, a little bit each year. And
so what did you start high school at, like, 20 miles a week?
Yeah, probably. Like, in high school, I didn't even know people counted mileage. Like, that's literally, like, what happened when I went to college. Like, I didn't know that that was a thing.
Yeah.
My high school coach, like, told me one time that I ran, I think my highest ever was, like, 30 miles or something. And it was,
and
like,
he was counting and you weren't.
Yeah, I didn't know that you counted. Yeah.
No, I was the same way. And I remember I looked back at some old articles, and I just have to thank my high school coach for not making me, like, I look at, like, the times that high school girls are running today, like, at the top, like, I wouldn't even know where to start. Like, running a long run, that'd be crazy. I think I hit 50 miles 1 week before my senior of high school cross country, and I was like, I am a badass.
But that's definitely, like, they're looking, they're just, like, maybe matured at an earlier age or something with their running. But I think it's really important for young runners to follow.
And you did another sport as well.
I did.
Yeah. So you weren't a 3-season athlete until college?
Not until my sophomore year. I redshirted one season in my freshman year. So, like, my sophomore, or actually I think it was my junior year when I eventually actually ran all 3 seasons.
So that was, you were over 20.
Yeah. I never ran all 3. Yeah.
I played ice hockey for a while, and then, you know, the bulk didn't really stay on the body, and I had to give it up, unfortunately. Uh-huh. But I had another sport too. I think that's really helpful for people to keep it, like, fun.
Yeah, and just do what works for them. Like, I did a lot of training in the pool. Like, in high school, I did other sports, but I also just, like, I feel like I was unique, and sometimes it's hard not to fall into, like, looking and seeing what other people are doing that are successful, because that might work for them, but it might not work for you. And so you have to, like, build off of what works for you.
Mm-hmm. So you graduated high school in 2013?
Yes.
Yep. And did you have, let's talk about social media, did you have an Instagram at that time?
I think I got it like my senior year, but Instagram was very different back then.
It was very different back then. We're kind of talking about like the comparative aspect of like seeing what other people are doing. I remember I would look up mile split because my coach would tell me to in high school, but there was no way of seeing what people were doing, what they were working out, what they were wearing. Like nothing mattered except for what you were doing. So you have kind of, you've built a social media presence around yourself.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy using social media?
I do sometimes. Yeah. It's like really great to be able to connect with people that you might not be able to see or talk to otherwise. And I think that's, you know, pretty great. But definitely like the comparative side that you're talking about can be challenging sometimes, especially when we're up here at altitude camp, we don't really have anything else to do. It's really hard not to get sucked into your phone. And like sometimes just I catch myself looking at my phone just like out of habit because I have nothing else to do.
Have you ever done the thing where you open Instagram, close it because you didn't think you should open it and then opened it again?
And you just scroll and I'm not even looking at anything. Like
it's crazy. I've tried
that.
You know, it's like soul sucking too. I had to.
Yeah.
My teammates make fun of me, but have you heard of like the Maria Kondo lady, The Art of Tidying Up, where she takes like an object of clothing and she says, does this bring me joy? And if it doesn't bring her joy, she gets rid of it. I've done that with like people I follow.
Yeah.
And if I have like a negative reaction to it, I'm like, why am I following this? And it's very strange because a lot of what we do is encouraged from our sponsors to publish and put out there, but it's also you're getting that feedback of what other people are doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, pretty cool that you can be, like, creative on social media and you can kind of build an image that you want.
And so your handle is Elle Runs For Her Life. Where'd that come from?
I just made that up. Like, I don't know.
I love it. It's
like,
different.
I think one of my friends helped me come up with it, like, in college or something.
I love it. It's different, too. Like, that's creative.
Yeah, thanks. It's kind of long, but I feel like I can't change it now.
You can't. It's become a part of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely, I would say that I am pretty happy that we didn't have social media in high school.
Yeah, it definitely makes information a lot more available to like a young runner. And I feel like that's not always healthy, I guess. But I was not really aware of a lot of professional runners when I was in high school at all. Like, I knew. Like, I followed, like, you know, some of the really top, like, best girls. And my high school coach really liked Lauren Fleshman, so we would listen to a lot of her, or, like, her journals and everything. We would read those, and she had a lot of great things to say, I guess. But.
Yeah. Have you ever considered writing like that? I mean, she wrote journals.
Yeah.
Were they kind of, like, blog posts?
They were blogs. That's the right word. Sorry.
Oh, nice.
I have thought of it, but, like, I feel like sometimes maybe it's just white noise. Like, I feel like she's, like, really good at it, but, like, maybe, like, sometimes too, like...
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly how I feel about this podcast. Does the world need another podcast? But I think...
No, but if you have something great to say, then do it. You know, maybe I'm just not confident enough to do that. But, like, I've definitely thought of it. Like, I think I could.
Do you journal personally?
I have in the past, and I think that's a great way for me to, like, kind of organize my thoughts sometimes, but I don't know if it's anything that I would want to share with the public.
It's definitely, no one should read my journals ever. I think I have a note, like, if I die, burn this, please. No one read this. So, one thing I would like to know, and I think I'm going to ask everyone this question. I'm not sure yet. Mm-hmm. This is the first episode, so everyone needs to bear with me. What do you think your dream job is post-running? So, Ellie, this is kind of, I'm going to kind of combine my two questions. So, let's do imagination. It's the end of your professional running career.
Mm-hmm.
One, the first part of the...
just got started, but no, I'm just...
She just got started. This is the end. But you're looking from the outside in. I actually work with a sports psychologist, and I did this really cool exercise was, imagine yourself at your retirement party. What are they saying about you? So, imagine yourself... You've retired, you've decided as a professional distance runner. What have you accomplished? This is the time to put your big dreams out into the world.
What I want people to be talking about.
Or what have you done? Like, what are your big goals?
Obviously.
Or dreams.
Yeah. My biggest goal right now is making the Olympic team in 2020. And so I feel like that's like a start. Sometimes I get a little scared thinking about, you know, like bigger goals, like years and years down the road, because I like to do incremental, you know. I think I would want to be known as a tough runner, you know, not, you know, I don't know. I feel like I'm not like super glamorous, but kind of a little blue collar and just like getting the work done and being tough. Like, I think,
yeah,
I like to be a badass.
I think you're a badass. I think everyone who, if this podcast ever had a multimedia component, I would include the last 30 meters of the Fifth Avenue Mile, where you're absolutely hucking your entire body towards the line. And I think I remember Ellie afterwards saying, like, I didn't even know I was. Do you think, what'd you run? Like 4:16?
Yeah.
You're like, I didn't even know it was going that fast. Like, that's what I think about you, is kind of this like train that's going down the path that is stopping for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that's a classic example of like not overthinking something and just competing. And that's when I think I had my best races. So
yeah,
that's definitely a good lesson.
So you're known as a badass. We're at your retirement dinner and you're announcing your next move. What is that?
So hard to tell. I think.
And this is something that doesn't have to come true, because it is 2020, and hopefully in the next 10 years, you know, your dream job might not even exist.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's not going to be a huge surprise that I want to go home to the farm and definitely have a life there. Like, I really miss the animals and working with them, and that's kind of a dream that Jamie and I have had for a long time. And so I definitely want to be really involved with the farm, but also like involved in my community. I think that my community has been like a big part of me, and they like built me. And so I think I can go do my big dreams and then come home and give back to my community, you know. I don't know if that would be, you know, like working with the school or like, you know, developing some sort of program with my nutrition degree. I'm not really sure what that would be right now, but that's kind of how I picture myself, and I definitely want kids, so.
Yeah, I know. That's so exciting. And your wedding is this fall.
This fall, yeah.
So you're kind of in a really cool place in your life where you can kind of imagine what that would look like with so much ahead of you with running.
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty cool. Yeah, Jamie and I are both chasing some pretty cool dreams right now and supporting each other.
Would you ever combine, I mean, you have two siblings, of course, that are working with your family farm. Like, would you ever, would the farms come together? Would that be a part of the marriage as well?
I don't know about that. Maybe, like, I really don't know. I don't picture that at all, probably not. My sister and brother do a really great job with my farm at home, and we haven't, like, had a really serious conversation about where that's going to be in the future, but I think it definitely has some potential with like agritourism. Like, I think that that's something my family's pretty passionate about.
I would definitely go to the Prairie Airbnb.
Yeah, there's just like a lot of misconceptions about the dairy industry in general, and so I think that that would be a good opportunity. And we've talked about it a little bit, but yeah, I don't really know.
Interesting. Well, this has been really awesome, just kind of kicking off this podcast and kind of talking about you as like a whole person and kind of what goes on behind the head of, because I mean, you're throwing yourself out there every day, but it's like, it's kind of nice to step back and reflect and take this really cool moment of January 20th, 2020, where your life could, everyone's here's lives could change in a couple of months. So
definitely. Yeah.
The last question I have for you is, where's the milk sponsorship? Got milk. The people want to know, and by the people, I mean probably just me. I've definitely asked you this before. Got milk used to be so big. I see you on the posters, Got Milk.
With the milk mustache, yeah.
Do they still do that?
I don't know. I haven't seen them recently, but it's definitely something I've talked about with my agent, and we're kind of trying to figure that out. I still like have strong connections with Cabot and everything, and so we've kind of been working together a little bit. And
is Cabot across the whole country? Is it regional?
So most dairy products are pretty regional, but Cabot actually, like, cheese is, you know, a lot more, what do you call it? Not perishable. Mm-hmm. So it can be transported. Like, I found some in one of the grocery stores out here, so I was pretty excited about that. But for the most part, dairy products are pretty local.
You know, so the More Than Running podcast has barely started, but Cabot, if you'd like to sponsor the podcast, we would be more than happy. Ellie can be a reoccurring guest. Thank you so much, Ellie, for talking to me and kind of putting your dreams and goals out there and having everyone get to know who you are and where you've come from and what you stand for. And I think we all see you as a badass and going to keep developing that legacy over time.
Thanks. It was great being here.
More Than Running with Dana Giordano is brought to you by the Sidious Mag Podcast Network. This episode was produced by Chris Chavez, music by Anna Sophia. I'm your host, Dana Giordano. Thank you for listening, and thank you for running.
I only want a few close friends. The rest just pretend. I turn to people kissing in the stairwell. I want this day to end. Text my mama so I don't lose hope. I didn't learn anything I didn't know. Always yelling, get off your phone. Screw that, I'm going home. But did you hand that in? Nah, I'ma take a zero.
Just call me.